Welcome back to the Horse Around Podcast. Andy Lindahl and Andrew Mason. Together we make either Andy Mason or Andrew Lindahl, however you'd like to do it. I've been saying Paxton Simeon and Trevor Lynch as I try to combine the two quarterbacks as well, Andrew, but you're now back. Tell us how the week in San Francisco was and what did we learn in this game?
Well, it was a good week. The obviously exceptionally spirited practices at times, especially when tempers kind of boiled over on Thursday, when there were fights on both fields. You had the Broncos offense against the Niners defense on one field, and the Broncos offense on the other field, and it got testy. But that tends to happen in these joint practices. So the key was kind of keeping things under control and not letting it get completely out of hand and be something that ultimately destroyed the practices, and it didn't. And then, it was funny. We all talked about the quarterbacks. Paxton Lynch had a couple of good days of practice, I thought, and then went out in the game and, he did some good things with his feet. That was something Vance Joseph pointed out in his post-game press conference. A nice little 12-yard scramble on 3rd and 10. Good decision there. But also some not so good decisions in the passing game. Like, you go back to an early third down. He's got a little bit of time in the pocket after C.J. Anderson picks up the rush. So it's a clean pocket. And he's got Demaryius Thomas open on a crossing route in front of him. Would have gotten the first down and gotten some more yards beyond that. Instead, throws it downfield into double coverage, trying to find Virgil Green. The pass is nearly intercepted. Now, that said, I mean, for all of Lynch's ups and downs, the narrative maybe is a little bit different if Demaryius Thomas isn't grabbed going deep downfield on a pass that certainly could have been potentially caught. But in the end, 39 yards on 13 attempts, and really a night that was a night of missed opportunities for Paxton Lynch. And then Trevor Siemian comes in late in the second quarter, looks very smooth, was working behind a first-team offensive line. Alan Barber was shifting in at left guard because he and Max Garcia were splitting first-team reps there. Looked really smooth running the two-minute drill. Hick Jordan Taylor adjusted to where the cornerback was, Asa Jackson on the play. Jackson was playing inside. So Taylor's outside, and Siemian hits him. Taylor with a nice adjustment on the ball mid-flight, allowed him to overcome a 10-yard holding penalty called by Garrett Bowles that wiped out a touchdown on the previous series. So, I mean, we'll see if a decision is coming, but if games are going to be weighted more heavily than practices, you'd have to give both games to Trevor Siemian at this point.
Look, I'm going to it's an interesting thing because I think Paxton was just playing ball for the first time, maybe all preseason. Looked a little more comfortable to me. Didn't look perfect. I'm not trying to say that. But I do feel like when he was running, I thought a couple of times he was just playing a little bit of football. Now, that said, when you look at Trevor Siemian, to me, he looks like the incumbent starter. I don't know what else to say, He looks like the guy that started for the team last year. He looks like the guy that has a level of comfort. He looks like he's getting a level of comfort, honestly, with this offense. But for me, Andrew, the case was made that with Trevor Siemian, if you start the year with him, I think, A, you got to start with him and see how far you can get. We all know that if there's a bad first half of the season, I have a feeling Paxton Lynch is going to get a chance to play anyway. First half of the season is so critical. You and I have covered that so many times, that the pace, the energy, the way the ball moved. Now, San Francisco is not a great team either, so let's all I don't know that they're that bad defensively, but they could knock it out of their own way turning the ball over last night, so I'll take a breath there. But I just, for me, that's how the offense has got to look the opening night against the LA Chargers. Now, I've been watching a couple of the LA Chargers preseason games, and I'm not quite sure what they're going to look like when they show up either. I would say things are not quite as smooth on the Anthony Lynn ship as they've been on the Vance Joseph ship. And let's be honest about it, Vance Joseph has been dealing with more controversies than Anthony Lynn has. So for me, Andrew, I think Trevor's got to get that first crack at being the starter right now. And I think we've got to see if Paxton's not the starter, You got to get after it again, young man. I don't want to hear CJ Anderson saying that you checked out of your playbook like you did earlier in training camp about Paxton last year. So hopefully Paxton, if he isn't the starter, studies and is ready to come back in, because you and I both know, depending on how that first part of the schedule goes, it's anyone's guess how often, how long the first starter of the season remains the starter.
Yeah, and don't forget, I mean, the bottom line is Trevor Siemian did have two injuries last year. So until you prove you can get through a full 16-game schedule without being hurt, that's going to be a concern in the back of your mind. And don't forget, then you go back to his senior season at Northwestern, and he has the torn ACL. So you just look at the last 15 games that Trevor Siemian has started. I mean, obviously, okay, that's kind of a cherry pick sample because I'm just going back to the last game he played in college, but he's got three injuries. So that's something that he's going to have to overcome. He's going to have to show that he can get through a season without missing some time, without suffering those injuries, or he's going to get tagged with that dreaded label, injury prone. And the reason I mention that is because, you know, you have a young reshuffled offensive line. Garrett Bowles at left tackle on Saturday, you know, he had some holding penalties. Now, you'd rather have a hold than, you know, a guy getting beat and your quarterback getting clobbered. You know, you can recover from a 10-yard holding penalty. And in fact, on two of those three holding penalties, the Broncos did get out of it. You know, credit to Lynch and Siemian, both of them got the Broncos out of a long yardage situation. It was a first and goal from the 19 after a hold, and Lynch had a first and 20 after a hold on Bowles, and both of them got out of it, which is sort of proves again why if you're going to have the quarterback get hurt or the hold, you'd always rather have the hold. But I know Bowles was frustrated with some of the calls, and I think part of that's just adjusting the next level. But it's a reminder that this offensive line is going to be a work in progress, and that there's going to be a chance that Siemian does get hit, and at some point you might have to see Paxton Lynch, and then you may have to figure things out from there. So, you know, if Siemian does get the job, and I think we can all say we expect Trevor Siemian to be named the starter at some point in the near future, just because of what he's done in the games and in the practices, the body of work is better than that of Paxton Lynch at this point. I think there's really it's really hard to debate that based on what we've seen. But think of all the work that the invaluable work that Lynch has gotten working with the ones, splitting the reps with Trevor Siemian at this point. And there's a decent chance that work is going to prove very valuable if the Broncos have to start Lynch at some point this year, whether it is because of a Siemian injury or whether it's because the team does struggle early and at some point does turn to Paxton Lynch. So there's a lot down the line. There's a lot of possibilities, good and bad, that we can't see. We can't, you know, that you can't project, but you do have to kind of mentally prepare for. And they're a bit better, and if Siemian is the week one starter, but they have to turn a Paxton Lynch down the line, they're better prepared for it. And I think better prepared to run a game plan that plays to Paxton Lynch's strengths than they were before all of this.
Look, and here's the bottom line. I think it's funny because you started talking about Garrett Bowles and get the hold rather than get the quarterback hit and on and on and on. And I agree with all that. But I think you also brought out one of the things, and Brian Griese commented on it in his color commentary about the quick release of Trevor Siemian helping his offensive line out. As you talk about the two young tackles, and look, Andrew, I don't know how it's going to work out. We could see a more veteran middle of the line if all of a sudden Alan Barber's in there, Matt Paradis returns, Ron Leary's in the mix, maybe even Ron Leary goes back to left guard because Barber can play both spots. I mean, it could be very intriguing to see how this works out. McGovern's looked good at center. You know, there's a guy that could play guard if you want more of the road grade on the right side, but look, my point being, Trevor Siemian, I think there's undervalued qualities, and I understand the Paxton Lynch faithful wanting their first-round pick to play. I get that. Andrew and I have been fans of other teams growing up. Andrew of Tampa Bay, myself of the Denver Broncos. I won't lie. I once upon a time in high school was the kid curious about Tommy Maddox. Was John Elway really old? Dan Reeves said he was, you know, we got to start thinking about this. We brought Tommy Maddox in. Is this kid any good? I kind of want to see him. I kind of wonder what's going on. We've all been there. That's what happens when you draft a quarterback in particular first round. But I hope, because like you, I expect, and I think we've been pretty clear on this podcast, I think we sort of been handicapping this race towards Trevor, minus the first week of mini camp or training camp when he seemed to get off to the slow start. But for the most part, you and I have sort of been pretty upfront about saying we thought it'd be Trevor. I hope the fans that didn't want Trevor, and we see you on Twitter out there, I hope you're just ready to back him, and I hope you're just ready to be a Bronco fan again, because this has been the most divisive quarterback battle I've ever seen. And I, Andrew, you and I have talked about it before. It just continues to kind of dumbfound me how this fan base seems so divided. I mean, the bottom line is these guys are both Broncos, and you should just be ready to ride with whoever you get.
They're divided about the quarterbacks. They're, you know, if you say anything bad about who their quarterback has to be, some fans will yell at you and say that you're biased. I mean, it's just the level of absurdity that the public discourse on this subject has reached in the last few months is colossal. And, you know, I'd like to think that, and I think most of Broncos country will rally behind Trevor Siemian and wish, and certainly, I mean, everyone wants to win. But look, I'm also a realist, and I also know how people tend to get when things go bad. If Trevor Siemian throws an interception in week one, a lot of those people are going to come out and start saying, "Told you so." You know it, and I know it.
Yep.
And I have no illusions about it, about anything different. You know, I don't really, you know, I don't have the greatest faith in human nature at times. I wish I did. I wish I did have a better faith in human nature, but I do think there are certainly going to be some pockets that do not let this thing go, and that even the slimmest indication of trouble start hollering for their guy to go in the lineup. I mean, look, I remember week six of 2012 when the Broncos were behind the Chargers at halftime, and I remember on my Twitter feed people were tweeting at me, "Oh, well, they should have stuck with Tim Tebow."
Yeah,
that's how a certain segment of every team's fan base is, and that's just not going to change.
Well, and Andrew, I want to also add to that, because you and I both lived through that, and I had to laugh. I used to go on national interviews and tell them, "Yeah, there is," because people would say, "Man, Peyton Manning must be the only one that's got Bronco country happy about, or the Bronco fan base happy about Tim Tebow leaving. That must have been the only move you could make." And I would tell these national programs, "No, there is a segment of the fan base that still wants Tim Tebow," and they'd laugh out loud. People just don't understand what the quarterback environment here is. But I can think of a couple guys on Twitter in particular. I won't name them, but I could, because I've seen Broncos country basically go after these guys. Do you know what? They both guys don't live in town, and basically try to cherry pick information off other people's Twitter feeds and then try to pass themselves off as experts, which drive both of us nuts anyway. But I've now seen the narrative kind of come out where, "Oh, you know what? They're both, neither one of them are any good. Neither one of them's a long-term future. Neither one of them," you know what? If you were rooting against Trevor, I don't know why you were anyway. He was your incumbent starter last year. He got you 8 of the 9 wins. And frankly, we've said all along, had he just put first-round draft pick by his name and had that season last year, nobody would have been griping about it. But it's the environment he has to live under. Don't act like both. Paxton Lynch right now is not a bust, and Trevor Siemian doesn't stink too because you're upset Paxton didn't win. And for everybody out there, I'd throw one more thing. Quit calling Trevor a seventh rounder. He's an incumbent starter. That's driving me nuts. He's an incumbent starter for a team that was in the wild card race till the last month of the season. So let's stop with the seventh round selection. That hasn't mattered for two training camps. You know, and frankly, Kyle Sloter's doing some things to show you that a training camp arm, which is what people thought he would be, can make an NFL roster as well. Because if it's not here, I'm positive somebody will minimum put him on their practice squad if Denver doesn't do the same. So I just want to stop all this venom about the quarterback position. Let's get ready for the season.
Yeah. With every passing year, you are on an NFL roster. Your draft status means less and less. I mean, now Rod Smith wore the undrafted label as a badge of honor. It was a motivation for him. But for all the, you had complaints about Ashley Lee for various reasons, but no one ever said, oh, Ashley Lee is terrible because he can't beat out Rod Smith for snaps because Rod Smith was undrafted and Ashley Lee was a first rounder.
Bradley Roby, who's actually saved some games going back to 2015, yeah. If you think about the pickup of the Jamal Charles fumble in Kansas City, that mm-hmm. kid has been an outstanding first rounder in my estimation and is going to get a nice second contract. He can't beat out undrafted free agent Chris Harris, but nobody cries about that. You know why? They're both great players. So stop putting is Trevor a great player yet? No. But Trevor, everybody that's near the team keeps saying neither one of these quarterbacks is a finished product. I can't wait to see what a year with Bill Musgrave does for that whole quarterback room.
Yeah, and what this offense does for Trevor Siemian. An offense that gets the ball out faster. An offense that allows him to be in the shotgun more, because, you know, for all the talk about, hey, Paxton Lynch, he's more comfortable in the shotgun because he did it at Memphis. Trevor Siemian did a lot of shotgun spread stuff at Northwestern and was very good in it at times. So those looks, those quick reads, they can help him and bring out the best in him just as much as they can bring out the best in Paxton Lynch. And in fact, I can look at a couple of plays on Saturday in particular where you're in the 2 minute and, perfect reads, perfect reads of the defense, perfect placement of the ball, relative to where the defender was, including the touchdown of Taylor. I mean, you can't do it any better. You can't do it any better than that. I actually saw someone who tweeted at me that the pass to Taylor was a terrible throw. And I'm thinking, what on earth are you watching? I think some of these people are just delusional, Andy. I really do. They're so delusional. They're so wrapped up in what their opinion is and what their preconceived notion is that they can't see the reality of what's in front of them, that they're blinded to it. But I think, we could talk about that with politics or anything else. It's just, it's in our backyard because we cover the Broncos. We deal with sports, so we have to deal with this.
Well, you're right. It's you know what? I'd love to do a sociology class in college and just talk about Twitter, the social media, on and on and on, and what it's done to all sections of society, not just the sports fan part of it. And you know what? The problem is we all have it. Look, you and I both know. And here's our old man advice for you under 30-year-olds out there. Just because you've had the thought doesn't mean you should put it somewhere where it can be found later on. Go ahead. Have the thought, live with it in some cases, and don't express it right away. Because you know what, especially during a football game, if I'd have tweeted what I thought about certain drives at some points and then watched what the final score was, especially when you go back to 2013 at times, we'd all look foolish. So just remember that before you get angry and send a tweet. We'll get off our soapboxes. Again, you and I expecting Trevor to be the starter, and I imagine a majority of Broncos country is going to support him because they did it last year, and I think we know that. Let's talk some running backs. I'm very curious to see Jamal Charles against Green Bay. I really don't even know that I have a problem if Jamal Charles is on the roster when we start the year, but I got to say, if I'm the GM, you got CJ. My plan would be CJ – for sure. You've got D'Angelo Henderson for sure. I'm keeping Steven Ridley. I'm keeping Andy Janovich. I'm probably going to put on the pup Devontae Booker. And I'm probably, 90% of me says keep Jamal Charles. But I got to be honest with you. Juwan Thompson is sort of intriguing. What could he do in this offense? Could he be that fullback that you need it like he was last year when Janovich goes down? I really don't know. You could probably use a tight end like that. But this team has a luxury, I would say, of options when it comes down to the running back position. But I continue to love the work that Steven Ridley does.
Oh, and the thing is, I mean, it's not just the power, but he last week watching him practice, the speed he showed to the edge, I wasn't really surprised by it because I've seen the practices at the UC Health Training Center in the last several weeks, but just the fact that he continues to show it day after day after day, and then he goes out in the games and just adds on to it, demonstrates that this isn't a flash, and that he's clearly got something left in the tank. CJ Anderson, I thought coming out of the blocks, had a really strong game. I think you'll get the yards per carry, and it's deceptive because you had those three rushes at the goal line, and I think the first and second goal, you could have argued that he was actually over the goal line on maybe both of those plays, frankly.
I thought so.
And then he got in on the third. So I don't look at that. I look at the work he did getting to the holes at midfield. Nice work from Alan Barber on one of those runs as well, you know, helping spring him. But also on the play that Paxton missed to Virgil Green, outstanding job picking up the blitz on that play to give Lynch the time that he needed to at least look downfield and get the throw off. And that's part of what CJ Anderson does so well. He's the best guy in that room at picking up a blitz. I mean, he's because he has the background in this offense from 2013 and 2014 when Adam Gase was here and building off of what Mike McCoy had installed before, that makes him invaluable in that room. And he's still the best overall blend of talent, you know, rushing ability, the ability to make a guy miss, pass protection, you know, the ability to catch passes out of the backfield. But the depth you have there, it allows you to kind of conserve him a bit, and maybe you can avoid having the injuries that have caught up to him in the past few years, and maybe you've got a better chance of keeping him healthy for all 16 games because of the depth you're talking about with a Ridley, with a Henderson, with Jamal Charles if he holds up well next week against Green Bay. And Devontae Booker on the pup, I mean, that's an interesting – it's an interesting thought. The only problem is then you delay his availability, you know, to late October, early November, even though he might be healed long before then. But you've got this roster crunch, and it's something maybe you have to think about in order to get everyone on the roster. And also knowing that natural attrition at running back means you may lose one of those guys anyway, and that's where the roster spot might come from.
Well, and I'll tell you this, though, if we're going to talk about that, because you know what I noticed on the Trevor Siemian touchdown to Jordan Taylor, that was allegedly a bad throw, I say snarkily. Stephen Ridley got in there and had a good blitz pickup there as well, provided some protection. I love the way you talked about the power. You know what else I noticed? Ridley on a couple of those first down short yardage carries does a great job of just tucking by behind his lineman, taking a couple shuffles, buying the yardage needed. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't go bursting into the line impatiently. He just kind of picked his way through the hole, and he found it. And then what else do you – you don't need to say anything about the first touchdown of the drive Trevor Siemian threw before the Garrett Bowles holding call, where D'Angelo Henderson, that was a video game move. That was Glenn Milburn-like with the power that C.J. Anderson brings. I mean, that kid is special. So I point all this out because Andy Janovich showing his worth in the offense last night, blocking as well. Mm-hmm. Let's just ask the tough question, Andrew. I'm just going to go ahead and do it. I was very excited about the Jamal Charles signing. I'm not telling you that I'm not excited about it anymore, but when you watch Stephen Ridley in particular play, who also is coming back from a knee injury, and you see the burst, and you see the power, and you see everything that you've talked about, the speed to the outside, at some point, don't you have to make – I know they've been cautious, and Vance Joseph said it's been his doing, and I believe him 100%, but don't you at some point, maybe this week, need to let Jamal go every day and see if the normal workload allows him to be okay or if that knee gets sore? Because, Andrew, I can't get out of the back of my head the end of Terrell Davis's career where he came into the year saying everything's fine and I feel great, and by the first week or two of the season, he wasn't great anymore and the knee wasn't right anymore, and I think you can't risk Jamal Charles having that sort of damage to his knee.
Yeah. And I think that may well be the plan for this week, given the fact that this is the dress rehearsal week, based on previous years. So you've got a game on. The game is on a Saturday as opposed to a Sunday, but this is where you go with the regular season schedule in terms of the length of practice, the style of practice, working against a scout team every day rather than ones against ones and twos against twos. So right down the line, it would be logical to have Jamal Charles practice and practice extensively every day and then get him to the game and give him a good run and see where the knee is and find out if he can handle the kind of wear and tear of what he would see in the regular season of practicing Wednesday, practicing Thursday, practicing Friday, and then playing on Sunday. Even though I imagine if he did make the team, they'd probably kind of give him some rest days from time to time in the regular season. But still, you need to find out his endurance. You need to find out how he cuts in a game situation. You need to find out what he does in traffic. I think this week, I'm not sure that there's many guys on the roster who have more on the line this week than Jamal Charles.
Well, and look, Andrew, Stephen Ridley plays special teams. I mean, that's another factor you've got to put in with this because, you know, let's say you go heavy at running back to keep Jamal Charles long enough to figure out what he does have. I mean, think about that. You could be cutting a guy like Juwan Thompson, who is a special teams guy. And, I mean, I don't know about you. Do you see – am I just too – I just have been so impressed with Ridley, and I love his story. I love how focused the guy is, and I've said that before. I just feel like that guy's on this team right now. And you know, look, he may be on the team. There's a chance one of these talented backs we're loving up right now may not even get a uniform game day because that's how talented and crowded that backfield could be. But I don't know. It's fascinating to me. If you hadn't – well, I'm not going to ask you to do that yet. We need to watch a couple more preseason games, and we'll do the who's on the roster thing. But I don't know, Andrew. It's intriguing at running back. I don't – where is your read on the tight ends? There's a lot of guys that I like just as guys. A.J. Derby's a great kid. I love Virgil Green. I've really enjoyed covering him. And I think that's a guy that makes the team. I'm hoping Heuermann can finally show us what made him the second-round pick in the first place. That's just been kind of so-so for me. What's your assessment as far as that tight end position? Because for all the talent and tough decisions we're talking about at running back, I think you may know who your three tight ends are, but it doesn't feel like it's been as competitive. Am I missing something?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I think you know who the three guys are, but at the same time, you wish you could kind of mash up their skills and get them all into one guy. And unfortunately for the Broncos, they don't have that. They have three separate guys, and so you've got to make sure that when they're out there, it's not a tell for what you're going to do. And the other thing, I mean, long term, it just feels like all this is a brace to Jake Butt. That you don't want to rush Jake Butt. And I do think that if and when he gets out there this year, I don't think you see him playing extensively. And if he does get into games later on this season, maybe it's red zone only or third down only. Maybe it's, you know, just it's a fairly judicious use of him. But I think we all kind of see the score and the long-term plan at the position. And the long-term plan at the position is number 80, who still has yet to take his first practice snap, but you know was clearly graded high. They feel like they got a first early second round talent. You know, this was an exceptional year for tight ends in the draft. I mean, I've called it the 83 quarterback class of tight ends, and the Broncos were fortunate enough to find someone who was a potential first rounder if he didn't have the ACL. So now it's a matter of making sure that he's healthy and he's confident enough on that knee to get the most out of him for the long term and ensure that that pick is every bit the steal that we all think it is. But for now, it's like I feel like you're just trying to get that bridge to the point where Jake Butt is ready, whether it's this year or fully ready next year. And so that's just kind of where they are. And it may well be that you know, we see tight ends on the field, but maybe they don't get used extensively. Maybe it's more two back sets. Maybe you're flanking the quarterback in the backfield in the shotgun with two tailbacks from time to time, and having one stay in and protect, and one go out for a route, or sometimes both go out for a route. That wouldn't surprise me. We've seen the Patriots do some of that in their iteration of this offense. There's a lot of possibilities, a lot of chess pieces, and maybe it's going to be a little bit less conventional than we all had in mind when this whole thing started in regards to the use of tight ends and how they end up fitting in.
Well, Andrew, we'll definitely have to talk a little more defense on the next podcast, although, you know, last night was such a weird night with the Niners screwing up the ball all the time. I don't even know what read we got off of it, so there'll be plenty more when we reconvene and break down a Packer game where you know the defense is going to get a lot better look to regular season football.
Yeah, the only read we got is the fact that you had a defense that had a lot of backups out there. I think it was you were basically down 7 starters, and yeah, the San Francisco offense was sloppy, immolated itself from time to time. He wasn't mentioned that much because Vance Joseph did mention Zach Kerr in the post game. But one thing I noticed right away was whenever San Francisco tried to block Domantopeko with one guy, when they ran, Peko usually was the one responsible for blowing up the play. You can't take, even at this stage of his career, you still can't take care of him with one blocker. You need two guys. And that's why he's here. Because if he occupies multiple blockers, you're opening things up inside backers and others to attack the run. That's the equation of Domantopeko. That's why the Broncos signed him. And yeah, he can't play every down, but he can play a good chunk of base package downs. And on Saturday night, watching him out there, it just reminded me that's why he's here. Because on those occasions when he did get singled, he's bursting into the backfield, or he's moving laterally across the line of scrimmage, and he's making sure the run doesn't get past him. That's why Domantopeko's here.
All right, Andrew. Well, it's going to be fun to break down the Green Bay game, and, of course, we'll be back at some point during the week to break down the quarterback decision, which I think we all think will be announced tomorrow. But tomorrow being Monday, you may be hearing this on a Monday. Today then would be the case. But the bottom line is we'll see when it comes. Vance Joseph, John Elway, making sure everybody knew they are not feeling that they're tied to any deadline to name a quarterback. But I think even if one isn't officially named in the next couple days, the starter that's announced for the game, you'll know is getting the nod regardless of how this works out. That'll do it for the Horse and Around podcast. Join us later in the week. For Andrew Mason, I'm Andy Lindahl. Talk to you then.